bin sicher, die meisten von euch
I'm sure most of you have flown already and have the passenger experience. We can cut that one out. But what happens in the background, that's the important and the interesting part. With me on stage are two people that know how this works and that can talk about this. Klein Sophie is one of them. She is a pilot with heart and soul, and is typically on the left seat. And Christian Lölkes is the other guy. He is known as Obelix in these charters. He is with airspace air control, we'll talk about that aspect. And the two together will tell you how this all works. Please give it up for Obelix and Klein Sophie. Thank you. Okay. We'll start with a question. Nice of you to be here. We have two questions, actually. First, who has been a passenger in aircraft? Okay, many, many hands are up. How many people piloted an aircraft? Hey, what are you guys doing here? Are you just here for fun, or you want to actually learn something? I think you want to ask the hard questions. So we only have 5 minutes of Q&A, so start with the hard questions right away. So before we actually talk about how to fly an aircraft, we need to talk about how an aircraft flies. So what do we need, first of all? We need a thing that has an aerodynamic form. When air blows around it, there's as little resistance as possible. And when air blows around it, air is hacker friendly. It doesn't actually want to go around it, so. So the thing has to be propelled through the air. We do that by putting a motor and all the other stuff here. And then we have an aircraft. Physically speaking, we have the weight of the aircraft, the mass of the aircraft, pulling it down, and to fly, you actually need lift. Lift goes up. Forwards, you something that propels you, and the other direction is air resistance. Now you have an aircraft. This complex equation tells you you can't actually stop. When there's a problem, you can't just pull over and get a coffee, but once you start flying, you fall to the ground. So what that means is we have to think about the flight before you actually fly. It's preparation. Well, can I start flying right away? So where do you want to go? Where do you want to go? I just landed and the aircraft is still in pieces. Okay, let's prepare for that flight. So let's take an atlas and put a line through the atlas. Well, look, here's Hamburg. It's foggy weather and we want to go to Mallorca. Well, that sounds like a good plan, but you know, if I start flying, I need to go through France. Is that allowed? Is that legal? Well, why don't you fly? Ask someone who knows. So, okay, I'll talk to you about it. We're only two people, so we have to, you know, play this together. So aircraft fly through different countries, and wouldn't it be nice if all countries had similar laws and legal frameworks around this? So when there were more aircraft, the ICAO was founded. The ICAO is an organization of the European Union. Please, you know, don't sleep in. This is going to be the boring part. So there's a lot of paper. There's a lot of red tape. it's like the World Health Organization and other organizations. All 193 UN states are member states in the ICAO. We actually checked this. Only the Vatican and Liechtenstein aren't part of it. They don't have a lot of airspace, so that's not really important. And you know, the Vatican doesn't have a football team, a soccer team either, so that's not really a problem. So the ICAO puts everything in documents and has come to agreement that aircraft can fly across other countries if you're okay, if you're nice guys. There's a lot of documents like for aircraft personnel, how to educate people, what are the rules, like, you know, right for left, what are the units of measurement. This is important, you know. There's countries that have weird measurements. So, you know, some countries measure in feet, others in meters, but typically things are measured in feet and nautical miles. Fun fact, for a long time we've tried to migrate from feet to meters, but it's been a long time.
And of course, all 193 member countries have to be persuaded that that's useful. It's a lot of paper again, but that's more. There's operation of aircraft. What must the aircraft be able to do? And there's telecommunications, radio protocols. It needs to be aligned and harmonized, very important. And aircraft accident investigation. Why do I investigate incidents? So we just try it again, and well, aviation learns from its accidents. Yes, surprisingly, that's something you can do. Yes, it's also very important. According to international law, there are rules how it needs to be investigated, which countries need to be involved. And in every country, there's an agency for that. Lots of reports are created, and we show you in the end. It's very important is that it's all transparent, and there are rules about airfields, how airfields should be, what should be there. And there are 19 annexes and 5,000 other documents in 7,000 versions in all languages, and it's really a huge thing. And perhaps you know, for example, I can imagine these airport codes. Frankfurt is FRA, Berlin is BER. Berlin has an airport, really? Yes? Oh yeah, Berlin has an airport. Yes, okay. If you believe it or not, it actually works. Anyway, there's another organization that is called IATA, and that is a group. It's an organization, not really international. It's just an organization, and it approves these airport codes, and that's not ICAO. And during this talk, we use other codes. For example, the ICAO code for Frankfurt is then EDDF, and Berlin is EDDB. So to explain this, IATA is marketing, and ICAO does the structures. And there's some document on page 9000. There's something about that, and even more. But it's a lot of paper again. So can we just start? Can we just take off? So we start. We open this slide again. So we have red and blue lines. And what's that about? So what have we got there? We have airspaces here. There's a lot of. We talked about a lot of paper, and in this paper there's always air, but we need to be around airports. We need some structure there, so we create air spaces. And it's a complex topic, so we start from the top. And the top is flight information regions. So a flight information region is like an administrative district. So it can be aligned with country borders, but it doesn't have to be. For example, on the left, you see Shenwick, and that goes out into the ocean and coordinates aircraft there. In Germany, we have three. We have the lower airspace, that's Bremen, Langen, and Munich, and there's the upper airspace, and there's only Karlsruhe and Maastricht. It's already lots of details. But in these flight information regions, as a pilot and aircraft, you are provided services. And then these flight information regions what follows from then is that there are control centers. Maybe you know the towers, the control towers at the airports. You can see those. There are cool people talking on the radio and have a lot of responsibility. But there's also, if you are further away from airports, then someone else has to take care of that. And for that, there are these aviation charts, and you see all the airspaces. It's very complex, and it looks complex, and it really is, because flying is sort of complicated. So what we see here now is the two-dimensional view of these airspaces. So let's start with what is an airspace. If I'm driving the car on the highway, then I'm really responsible for not rear-ending the one before, and I shouldn't brake too hard so that the one behind rear-ends me. So that's because I can see, look out the window and see what's there, and there are markings on the road, and I drive straight on. If I fly an airplane, then I'm quite fast, and I'm not in a two-dimensional space, but in the three-dimensional space. And sometimes I open the door and throw out people, and then there shouldn't be anyone below me, because that's not quite a good idea. Sometimes I really fly quite fast, and I can't really look out very easily, and someone else should tell me how to fly and where to fly, and someone else should separate the aircraft. In the ICAO, there are aviation rules, and that's, among other things, these airspaces. And let's take a look here, and that's Berlin-Brandenburg. It's a bit like an onion, because in these different airspaces, there are different responsibilities and different procedures, and your airplane has to really fulfill certain technical requirements. And there are zones where you cannot fly. Where's that? Oh, it's these circles. Can I really send a fax so I can fly there? Well, you can apply for an approval. You can't do fax anymore. It's only post, mail or email. So where's the chaos post? Can you, the chaos post, can they maybe apply for that? Well, it's possible, and this chart tells us. And it's really stupid here. If I really want to fly around Berlin, then I have to fly a circle because there are these zones. I don't want to fly into them. But we can see that inside these lines, there are little boxes. And you can see below left, there's FL75 to FL100. We have altitudes and flight levels. And flight level are according to the standard pressure of 1013 hectopascal. And I tell my airplane, you have this pressure. And then my altimeter shows a value according to this value. So the air pressure is wrong, but the same wrong for everyone. If we fly fast and high, that applies. If I fly in this flight level with my jet, and there's a Charlie, this C. What does that mean? An airspace Charlie, air traffic control is responsible for these jets who fly according to instrument flight rules, that they don't collide with each other. And they also see that we little ones flying after visual flight rules don't really disturb those. And they tell them you're flying right and you're flying left, and they really have that authority. But in ECHO, I can do flying after visual rules what I want, as long as I adhere to all the laws. But air traffic control cannot tell me to fly left or right. But there are also airplanes flying according to instrument flight rules, but air traffic control controls this airspace, and it tells the instrument rule flyers, there's another airplane, please look out the window. And at the very bottom, there's airspace golf, and there are no instrument flyers, and you shouldn't touch the clouds, but you have to look out. But there is a problem. Sometimes I really have to, with a jet, after instrument flight rules, I have to come down safely or go up safely. And we have seen in ECHO and in Golf, there are no separation that is assured by air traffic control. So we have to really see this, that this Charlie goes down. So that's why we have this funnel. And you can see that it's wider at the bottom, than at the, wider at the top than at the bottom. And down there, the airplanes are slower and don't need as much space. And on the top, they're faster, so they need more space. So what you saw before, there was a side view of this one that you see from the top now. If you really don't want to fly through that, and so you can fly below it or above it. That's often possible. You have to think in three dimensions when you read these aviation charts, because you also fly in three dimensions. And that's really the challenge there. But what I wondered always, the airspace starts at the bottom and it at the surface, and there's golf and everything, and there's flight restriction areas, but the graphics stops at 660. What's above that? It's an interesting, the air is very thin up there. So flight level 660 is about 20 kilometers, but above there, there is still air. It's just a little bit of air, but it's possible to fly there, and it's really hard because you really need an afterburner with a cabin and not really an airplane. Really consumes lots of fuel, but you're alone there because nobody else is going to get there. But where does the airspace stop? Nobody explained to me why it's 660. I don't know. But there are other countries, for example, Austria, and they say the controlled airspace, the airspace controlled by the country of Austria, where aircraft cannot fly aerodynamically anymore, but if they fly on Keplerian orbits, so by the when you don't need a wing anymore, then you're no longer an aircraft, and then you are not under air traffic control. It's the only aircraft that really could do that transfer was the space shuttle, and there are some spy planes that can fly that high, or you can try to do a parabolic flight to go that high, but it's really quite difficult and very expensive, and it's not really that much fun anymore. But I really want to say, if I'm up there, then the air belongs to me, and I really don't have to take care of anyone else. But do you fly above flight level 660? I cannot really tell you, but sometimes there is somebody up there. So in the US, for example, there's someone who shoots up rockets, and they land, and they go vertically through that. And I don't think that they make way for me. I don't know if they fly after instrument or visual flight rules, but things could change on short notice. The world isn't perfect, and you have to print charts, and you have to cut down a tree and make paper and print things, and they do that every year, and someone earns money from that. So the charts, you have to say, there's the ICAO chart, and states, countries control that airspace, but so that not everyone needs to listen to our talk to know how it works, but you can read the aviation information publication, and there's that. But it's standardized, and there's everything inside of that, where you can fly, where you can't fly, what an airport looks like, what a pilot needs to be able to do. And if something changes, then how do we know that?
So this map looks different. It's less colorful. So look, so where it's yellow, we need to pay attention. We can't fly where it's red and gray. That's maybe where the drones fly. Those are short changes. No times to air emissions. Airmen is the term here, or to air emissions. It's like a love letter from air traffic control to the flight personnel. It's very encrypted, well, at least obfuscated. Isn't it obvious what this says? Well, actually, I'm not quite sure what it says. Oh, so these are the ICAO codes. At the university, professor would have said, look closely and you'll see it. So CSD RVY, well, tell me what this means. So the first line is like metadata. It says who published this information. It's Langen Flight Information Regent that publishes. QMRLC means it's in the area of a runway where there is a restriction of motion. IV means it's for instrument flight as well as for visual flight. NBO means it's important now. B for briefing and O for operational. Others are less important. A is this is for an airport, and it's between flight level 0 and 99. And the position. The next line, EDF, that's Frankfurt, and the next line after that means it's between the 24th of December 23 to the 24th of December 28. So, and these times are UTCs. And it, what it says is runway 18 is closed. daily between the hours of 10 in the evening and 4 in the morning. You know, night flight isn't allowed, and that's what this says. Okay. So we don't just close runways. So what else do we do? Well, okay, so we need a motor. Motor needs gas. Gas means money. So what do we do with money? So we need to pay. So sometimes credit card terminals are defect and I need to, you know, withdraw money from the bank before. Or it could be the other way around. Maybe cash isn't accepted and only credit cards are accepted. Like, for example, if you fly to Sylt, there's only one airport. You need to make sure you have the right kind of money with you or the card with you. So what you can see are these codes here. In this case, the publisher is a different region. The category QFAXX means facilities at the airport, XX because it's not used. All the other fields you've already seen, it's, you know, time from when to when this is important. So, for example, EDVH means, you know, between. Okay, so while we prepare this flight, there's people that think that abnormals are a cool thing and do loopings and whatever else. That's not quite compatible with our rules, so we need to fly around them. So that's little love letters that contain actually important information. Everything that's important is in these things. Well, you've seen three examples with a lot of, you know, text for very little information, and it's quite unsexy, really. But it's not a problem because we're going from Hamburg to Mallorca. So we'll look through the NOTAMs. Okay, this is what this looks like. This is the briefing. Client Sophie has prepared the flight. So I know you're asleep already, but we actually still want to fly. So Hamburg. So there's a light, an obstacle that's defect, and there's a light, an obstacle that is defect. So there's many defect lights on obstacles. Can't you skip over these details? Oh, well, okay, here's more details. All right. So can we just keep this short? But wait, we're just in Finkenwerder. There's still another obstacle. We're almost there. Wait, there's more. Sophie, you lied to me. You said this is going to be quick. So where is this now? We're we're in the FAR region now. Oh, look, there's maneuvers that you can't fly over. So here's an important thing, and you can just scroll through it. And you can see there's a lot of text, and there's a lot of obstacles with defect lights. And that's, well, okay, where are you now? This is new. This is 38 pages of pure text, and there's a lot of stuff that's not quite as relevant. But somewhere in there, it says there's an airspace that you can't fly through. And the flight crew, before every flight, needs to skim through all these pages of text by hand. And it's not available to listen to. But you need to go through this mindfully, and then you know where the changes are to these airspaces, and then you need to know where the airspaces are. That's a different topic altogether. So what do we know until now? We know where we want to fly, we know where the airspaces are, and we know whether these airspaces have changed. So there's a different problem. Okay, here's the problem. You look out and you'll see the weather isn't what it used to be. So in the north, the weather isn't great, but Mallorca has good weather. So here's the problem. When I can't look out of my cockpit, I don't know where I'm going. So somehow I need to change my flight rules. Second, water can be cold, which is nice in your drink. during flight, that's not great, specifically when water condenses and builds ice on your airplane. So what you need is anti-ice on your aircraft. Or if there's maybe a thunderstorm, you don't want to go through the thunderstorm. That's just no fun. The passengers are upset. The tomato juice will be spilled. So what you can see on the left-hand side is a map with the significant weather. So you can see the wind. It's wind from the west up here, and then down there it's wind from the south. So the wind is turning to the right. That means it's a high pressure area, but we don't want to go to the details. And on the right hand side you see even more text. In this case it's not NOTAMs, it's METARs and TAFs. They tell us about the weather now at the present time. And they give us a forecast, the terminal area forecast. So we'll start in Hamburg. In Hamburg, we have 4 knots of wind and coming from southerly directions and 5 kilometers of visibility, and it's quite cold actually. So the pilots would say there's no bad weather, there's only bad preparation, or the wrong aircraft. But weather can change, and that would be in the TAF. The TAF tells us, as a text, the change over time in the weather. Not sure you can see that. So there's words like tempo and becoming. So what this means is a temporary change. Up, you know, at the top you have the static condition, so to speak. And then it can change temporarily, or it can change for good. Sophie, I just want to fly, right? No, we need to still prepare. Okay, so we have a plan, but somehow the plan looks different. Why do we not fly a straight line? Well, first of all, we fly at the surface of a sphere, and the shortest distance between 2 points is not really a straight line, it's a circle. The other thing is, and you have terrain, and you have the weather, and you have the NOTAMs, which we must navigate around. And lastly, the air control has to go along navigation equipment. So there's things like airways that you have to use between A and B, and it might be Alpha 372 might be the name of the airway. Look, this is where you need to go, but you need to communicate that to the pilot.
So it looks like a fax, this wonderful document, and you can really submit it by fax. That's possible. And sometimes you can use the app. In Spain, that doesn't work with the app. Doesn't work. You have to really do it by telephone, and you have to read it. And we start at the top, and we have the aircraft registration, Delta Echo Romeo Foxtrot Hotel. Then the air traffic control can see that it's in Germany and it's Echo that is less than 2 tons, and we want to fly according to instrument flight rules, and ignore that I can't really do that. But with general aviation, so we are in the category light, and we have GOI and S as an equipment. We want to take off at Hamburg at 2200 Zulu time. And we already have taken off. Oh, just tell them. And I tell them how much fuel I have. 12 hours of fuel is in the Katana is not really possible, but I'll fly alone, so you stay there. But I take care of you, because this flight plan, and we really saw Sophie is really very well prepared, and she knows everything, and she's prepared for everything, bad weather, bad mood, hunger or thirst. But we are not alone in the airspace, and there is something that's called Air Navigation Service Provider. That is the service provider, and we talked about that, and they really take care of you and look after you, and that Sophie really does what is in her flight plan. And there are also other aircraft. So the air is a shared medium, and the other airplanes also want to fly, and they can't come too close. So it can't be that suddenly there are 80 airplanes in one piece of airspace and zero in the other. So these flight plans help in Europe to coordinate the flights and use the airspace optimally, that it doesn't become too crowded, because that's getting really uncomfortable. So we submitted our flight plan, and we are ready. Now we can fly. Yes, really, finally. Okay, to sum it up, we decided the flight rules, so visual or instrument or both, if there are clouds, for example. We know how heavy we are, how much fuel we have. We know where we want to go and why. And we told the air traffic control that we didn't only talk about preparation, but we created a lot of paper. We know the route, and we know the airspaces in front of us, and we know that sometimes we are able to fly left or right if something happens. Why do we do that? For example, if we take off, we leave terra firma and change into the medium of the air. As soon as we do that, there's a point where we cannot stop the takeoff, and we really have to take off because the runway is just too short. Starting with that point, flying is really working along the plan that we made, that we prepared. And then you can't really get rid of any problem. You really have to evaluate risks and problems. You have to prioritize problems. And so the clue is really, if you really try to think of everything, even things that you really don't like, you really have to find an alternate airport for landing. No times may change en route. And that's why the preparation is so important, because you can't just park. So the aircraft has to go on flying, and you can't stop. But we start flying, and there's the first problem. Maybe I should have told you at the beginning. We told you shortly, it's a really industry, and we really could talk about 9 million different things, but really want to concentrate on a few important things. If we omit something, that doesn't mean it's less important, but we really want to do anything else. So look at that. We are really in this little plane, and we really blocked the way for the big one. So you see why planning is important. So the procedures are the same for everyone, the small and the big and the little ones, but there are some differences you can't really get rid of. So what does it mean? In the beginning, we talked about that airplane flies because the air carries the plane, and that means the air needs to be where I want it to be, so the wing can go through the air. So if the air is moving, for example, if there's wind, then there could be turbulences. So the aircraft has to move the air to be able to fly. So the little airplane moves a lot less air than the big one behind it. So that leads to, if the order would be different and the small airplane would be flying into the air movements of the big ones, it would be shaken, not stirred. So, and it's called wake turbulence. It's a special turbulence, and you can see that very good here in this picture, where at the wingtip the air rotates, and that's really huge masses of air. And if this little aircraft flies through the wake turbulence of the 747, that will turn you upside down, and you can't really do anything about it. That's why air traffic control separates us. So with this aircraft, it always says how heavy it is, and if you compare the sizes, I don't know how heavy the one in front is, and the one behind can be 300 or 400 tons, really, and it can still fly. And so you really have to imagine how much air needs to be moved, that 400 tons can really just get into the air comfortably and without problems. And that's really dangerous, and so you have to keep your distance. And that's a distance is normally measured in either in time or in distance. And for takeoff, it's really important, and for landing as well. So let's fly now. We don't have any more time. Okay, we fly. Okay. And flying is really these three points: aviate, navigate, communicate. We can't really get rid of problems by discussing them. So that's a problem with the time, and we aviate through this talk, and we navigate, and then we communicate this talk. So we are not alone. So we looked that up. So there's just a few airplanes. It's the lower airspace. This is up to flight level 100. So what's the problem? There are just these few. I can just fly around them. It's only the arriving and departing, but above that is a lot more. But look, that's between flight level 011 and it goes up to 660. So what's the problem? They could just stack on top of each other. It's very easy. But if you filter that, I really want only up to 300, from 300 up to 400. It's not very different. And that's because, for one thing, if you fly from Berlin to Munich or from London to Madrid, I really want to fly as direct as possible. So there aren't so many different ways. Nobody wants to fly a big deviation. We just look out the window and we, well, you can see we're flying quite high and we are flying all on the same route, 6,000 Fuß, that's 6,000 Fuß. Yeah, other planes fly higher. But below this was the Atlantic, but never mind. They all fly at similar altitudes. And that's really the optimum operating point. So, for example, like car engines have the best efficiency at a certain RPM. So everyone wants to fly in the same altitude because it saves fuel and the same route. And then it really gets crowded. And that's why you have to navigate. Flying, well, you hold the stick so it flies stable, and then you need to navigate. So I have a window in the airplane. So Sophie just said that. So where am I? So you're just over the Atlantic. Behind you, just below me is the airport. And why do I know that? Well, but there's a ground station there that tells me with a signal and tells me that I'm there. So there are different ways of navigation. You can look out the windows, but this only works with good weather and only during the day. And then there is INS, that is inertial navigation system. That's a gyro, and you set the position when you take off, before you take off, and then it tells you how it works. But look, the easiest is to use just GPS. So where it's red, you don't have GPS, and where it's yellow. But GPS can be disturbed. And in these borders of conflicts near Ukraine and at other borders of NATO towards the east, and the reliability of GPS is really low. And if you are inside your airplane and are in one of those regions, it's really bad because you don't know where you are. So there are some alternatives. There are air navigation service providers, and they offer ground-based navigation systems that the aircraft can use. And you can use, if your GPS doesn't work, you say, I don't have a problem, I can look out the window, and you have an inertial navigation system and have ground-based navigation systems. And, oh, I do it differently, I just ask Edge of Control where I am. So, yeah, you can do that. Oh, how does that work? Oh, there's an airplane. Oh, there's a radar. An airplane! Oh, a radar. Oh, there's an airplane that flies. Yeah, there's a radar. And we have different passions, really. What you see is a good example. This is maybe you have, it's a radar screen, and you see that from the movies. No. You have another slide. There's a different slide there. We still have 3 minutes. So our flights are better prepared than this one. So, well, we fly and we don't talk normally. But what's the air traffic control? There's primary and secondary radar, and there's this thing here. And then now there's something. Now we're going to land.
So we can do visual approaches. We're going to make a visual approach here. We see the runway, and when I approach, I might see these lights. Okay, so now we're talking about the precision approach. So you can see we talk with passion, and that's difficult in this to put in time. Okay, so let's talk about the ILS, the instrument landing system. This helps so you don't need to actually land with your eyes. There's two antennas. There's the glide path antenna and the localizer antenna. The localizer says where the runway is, and the glide path tells you the angle. And it works at night. It works with fog. You really, in your aircraft, you only have to look at your little display and you can land. There's normed approaches, and you can make sure that aircraft don't fly across areas of the city where they don't want any noise. So when we've landed, There's still the time when we need to actually do the post-flight stuff, but. Thank you.